Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 3rd, right before Election Day, the day in which the Kudzu Vine exists for electing candidates in politics. Good evening, Catherine.
Hello.
Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, glad to have you all on with us. Well, the idea tonight, the theme is municipal candidates, as many as we can get through, and we opened it up, and we already have somebody on the line with us, Bob Roach, who's running for Doraville City Council. Bob, good evening.
How are you?
Oh, doing well. So you're seeking the Doraville City Council post. Tell us a little bit about how that council's constructed and which post you're running for and the mechanics of it.
Doraville City Council has six council seats, three of which, there's a four-year term, three of which are come up for re-election every 2 years. They're staggered. In this particular race, there's also a mayoral race, and one of the city council people had to resign his seat to run for mayor, so we will actually have four city council seats up for grabs on Tuesday.
Yes, and is it citywide, or is it in wards, or?
Well, we vote citywide, but two council members come from each of three districts.
Yes, okay, so you having a campaign all over Doraville. Well, tell us,
right.
What are some of the major issues this year in Doraville?
Well, a lot of it's kind of healing after most people understand that we had a situation where the chief of police and some disputes with the city council, and that's kind of torn the town apart, and we're looking to kind of heal things and bring them back together. I think the number one issue that I hear about, and of course which I end up talking about, is just that city council is having a hard time with working together. There's very little cooperation. Doraville's been faced with this frame that it's all about the good old boys versus the people that want progress. And the good old boys don't want to change anything, and then the people that want progress are, you know, and it's a big battle. I reject that frame. Actually, it's more of a matter of just, as I say, Doraville can get a lot done if we would just work together. There's a lot of politicking that's going on that's been negative, and the good news about that is that the people that are doing the negative politicking are apparently not going to fare very well in this election. So,
well, that's good. Now, Doraville's a bit of a bedroom community, I would think, and people might live in Doraville but work elsewhere and not spend all their time in Doraville. How does that affect the campaign as far as people being plugged in?
Well, it's exactly that. Last year when I was running for State House, I campaigned all over District 81, and I found a lot of areas where they were doing a lot of infills, which if they're done right, they're fine, but in a lot of cases the developers essentially just destroy the existing neighborhoods. And I would have people just shaking my hand with tears in my eye, in their eyes, talking about how all their friends had to move away. Doraville hasn't really reached that point yet. I believe that if you've lived someplace for 20 years or 30 years, you ought to be able to be reasonably assured of living out your days in the home and the neighborhood that you live in, if that's what you want. There's no question Doraville will be developing and redeveloping. We have the GM plant that's going to be closing probably sometime in the next year, and that's going to need to be redeveloped. Buford Highway, frankly, is looking a little on the seedy side, to say the least. That needs a lot of work. So I honestly believe we can have a balance of doing this development, making sure that the development is driven by the citizens of Doraville, not by the developers themselves.
Okay.
That's
well, we'll be watching your campaign and the results on Tuesday, and wishing you luck, because we know you're a good Democrat running for a non-partisan spot.
Well, one thing I want to do, and what we as Democrats need to do in Georgia, is we need to start supporting candidates at this level, because we need a farm system to build the bench so that there are candidates that are ready and willing to move on up. It's not going to be an overnight process, but I think the sooner we begin doing that, the sooner we'll... The one thing I hear over and over again in Georgia is we don't have any candidates. Well, this is how you become a candidate. This is how you become a candidate with experience so you can move up. We've got to build this farm system so we can build this bench.
Yes. Well, I thank you for calling in, and I wish you luck on Tuesday.
And thank you for
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now we'd like to welcome Representative Paul Smith from running for Rome City Council. Representative Smith? I see Representative Smith's number on the line, so he may have kind of tuned away since I guess he thought that he was in a holding pattern. Representative Smith? Okay. Well, we'll see if he kind of joins us on. He's open air, so he can come on whenever he's ready. Just a lot of races. I know one of the big cities in Georgia that was supposed to have some contested races originally was going to be Macon, although they kind of decided everything on primary day. I believe Savannah has some contested races. Is that the case? Catherine, Tim, are you all aware of that?
I was just looking at the AJC election thing. Hold on.
Yes.
You know the funny thing, David, is that the any other races in Georgia been kind of overshadowed by the earlier race in Macon that was really decided on primary day.
Yes. And then, of course, Atlanta doesn't have races. There's or the other odd year cycle. So that changes things. I think Representative Smith's back with us. Representative Smith?
Yes, I'm here, David.
I'm glad, sir. We were talking to Bob Roach, who's running for Dorval Council, who ran for State House last time. You're seeking re-entry into politics after a long 11-month hiatus. How long has it been?
It's been about that long. I did not seek re-election to the House this time, and then when I noticed there was an open seat in the Rome City Commission, I decided to seek that one. So Tuesday will be the reckoning day, I guess, and we'll know where we are.
Yes. Now, the Rome City Commission, correct me if I'm wrong, there are three wards, and people run citywide, but you have to live in a certain ward. And there's about, 11 seats on the Rome City Commission?
Well, there's 9 seats, 3 in each ward. And what we have this time is you have 3 from 1 and 3 from 3, but only 1 from 2 to fill an unexpired term.
Yes. And, of course, after the city council races, the mayor's decided out of the city council winners, which that's actually going to be an open seat. Is that correct?
That is correct, because Ronnie Wallace, who has served as mayor for the past few years, is not seeking re-election.
Yes, and not to put the cart before the horse, but you would be probably the most highly recognized name on the city council at that point, so things could fall your way, possibly.
Well, you got to win first, you know, and that's it's a four-way race, and we're working hard. It looks real good, but, you know, I'm enthused with the idea of serving the people again. I just kind of missed it. I had been in public service for a number of years, as you know, in the House, 22 years before that, as a job with the University of Georgia Extension Service, and after 11 months, I said, you know, I really ought to get back into action.
Yes. Well, what do you see as some of the issues on the Rome City Council?
Well, you know, we have the water issue that we're going to have to face up to. We normally would have more water coming through Rome than leaving Rome that comes into Atlanta, but they have limited the amount that we have or can have. We've got an issue with the landfill. We've got issues with illegals, and I think we've probably overloaded with those. And traffic is a real problem. And another reason that I decided I should run, you know, I've worked for years for the South Rome Bypass, and we're going to let the first contract on that hopefully this November. So I'd kind of like to be involved with that as it progresses. It's going to make a lot of difference to the city, even though it's in the county, because it'll pull all the big pulpwood trucks and things like that out of town, and it's going to relieve traffic in the city, and that's going to help all of us.
Yes, I know I don't enjoy getting behind those. Luckily, I don't have to get behind them as much since I don't have to travel to Coosa every day out where Plant Hammond or Rome Inland is.
Yes.
Yes, well, you mentioned water, and that kind of ties your current race up to your past service in the House. We've heard a lot in the past few weeks about some reservoirs that Roy Barnes and Speaker Murphy and a lot of the Democratic leadership had planned. From your understanding, had those three reservoirs been built, would the situation be near as bad, or would that have been the fix?
Oh, it wouldn't have fixed everything for the city of Atlanta, probably, but it certainly would have relieved the pressure from all the other areas of the state. And as you know, the entire northern area of the state is under restrictions, a cut of 10%. And I have advocated reservoirs for years. I think it's certainly the way to go to, you know, collect water during the rainy season and hold it for times when we have droughts. We've never had a drought to this extent in my years, and I've got a few years on most people, but I definitely think that. And looking at the water bill that I've seen so far, I've got some real problems with it, the one that's going to be addressed in January, because the language that I see says should, cities should. See, you know, when you say they should, I don't think that's going to be adequate, particularly with interbasin transfer. I think you're going to have to say must. So this is something that makes folks in areas like us with not really the votes to pass a bill wary of what's going to happen, and we're going to really be watching that.
Yes, because I know that, you know, had that bill been built, it probably wouldn't have done any effects to northwest Georgia other than the Tallapoosa area, but it might have helped other people have the rainwater they need to where it wouldn't have siphoned it off when it comes through the Etowah up in our area.
Well, we have some areas in Floyd, Chattooga, and Gordon County that would be ideal reservoirs, and hopefully we can get together with one or more of these counties and build an area reservoir that will protect us in times such as this.
Yes. Now how is campaigning for a municipal spot different than campaigning for a state house spot?
Well, it's totally different because the issues are different, and you know, you have a smaller area to work in most cases, even though Rome almost makes up a legislative district. It you still have to go outside to get a full legislative district, but the issues are different. The voters are the same, but you really have to just address local issues rather than just state issues.
Yes. Well, also on the show with me tonight is Catherine Smith out of Atlanta and Tim Shiflett from up in Somerville, and I know you know Tim well.
Okay.
Tim or Catherine, do you have any questions for Representative Smith?
Yes, sir. I would like to follow up. By the way, how are you doing tonight, Representative?
Doing real good, real good.
Good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a follow-up. You had stated that perhaps land in Chattooga County might be available for a reservoir. And as you know, on the far side of Taylor's Ridge, they don't have access to county water up here. And I was wondering if such a reservoir was built, would the residents of that area get to tie into the water?
Well, I think it should. I think the only way we can build a reservoir that will be of adequate size is for it to be a multi-county. And I think probably, ideally, we have an area that we've looked at that would be just perfect for Chattooga and Floyd, at least, whether Gordon wants to come into it or not. Now, as far as the area being available, my understanding is if you have to, you can use eminent domain for this.
I see. And the other question I have is also about that very thing. Do you believe that now that we have these terrible water problems, that funding will really be no problem?
Well, funding is always a problem, but I think we'll go. What I'm hearing is the state is going to be interested in providing some funds, probably long-range bonds, and you know, it's just when you think of the idea that some of the areas of our state might not have drinking water in 90 days, it's frightening, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is. Yeah. Thank you very much, David.
Sir.
Yes. Well, I know a big issue that's been brought up by some of the candidates has been the footbridge. What's your opinion of the footbridge across the Oostenaula?
Well, I don't think that's going to affect our water. about that for an answer. Well, it's something the city of Rome requested, and I was not on the city council at that time. The state made available back many years ago $1 million as a project, and they did select that. Some people were blaming David Dawes for it. Actually, that happened back in the days before David even came on the board. It's just been a long, drawn-out process. It's hopefully, with the new ideas of what's happening on West 3rd, it's going to be a positive thing for us.
Yes, I'll kind of straddle the fence myself. I know when I was down there on Friday afternoon around lunchtime, there's plenty of parking places around near the Forum, near Broad Street. I would have said, hey, this isn't needed. Then I came back on Saturday, the CRBI Fish Fry, and we couldn't find a place within, it seemed like, you know, three-quarters of a mile of the Forum, which for the Forum, that's a long way. Mm-hmm. And, hey, that seemed kind of needed. So I guess it's just what time you go to the Forum, if it seems needed or not.
It looks like a rather massive bridge, doesn't it?
Yes, but maybe they'll fill up the Forum enough with some more events to make it more viable.
Well, I hope so. It's done, so let's accept it and move forward and utilize it.
Yes, well, I had one final question for you tonight, and that was, your seat was one that, it, on paper, it looks like a Democratic seat. You decided to retire, which was certainly, you know, you had served your time, but we weren't able to hold that seat, but we came within just like 100 or so votes short, and we actually outperformed Lieutenant Governor Taylor in your old district. What do you think the Democrats need to do next time, or what didn't we do last time that will help that seat coming back in our column?
Well, of course, you've got to have, and you did have a viable candidate this last time. It's,
I agree.
One of those cases where they poured so much money into it, and it wasn't exactly a pleasant campaign, in my opinion. I thought it got kind of out of hand as far as accusations and things like this. But a good, strong candidate with a good program, I think, will probably make a creditable showing and put this back in that area.
Okay, and of course, if a Democrat came in, they'd probably rely even more on your leadership, and that would be a good tie-in for you being on the city council.
Well, I look forward to serving in case I am successful on Tuesday.
Okay, well, I even though I can't vote, I'm kind of predicting success based on your name recognition and record of service.
Well, I thank you, David.
Okay, thank you for calling in, sir.
All right, goodbye.
Bye. Okay, Representative Smith, I know a lot of us in the Rome area know him well. He was, I believe, was he chair of the Transportation Committee for a good many years, wasn't he, Tim?
Yes, he was. Very, very active on it, too. And that'll come in handy because, as you know, David, downtown Rome has, how do I say this, a 2007 traffic problem and a 1960 road system.
Yes, we just don't have the volume that Atlanta and I'll have. Catherine, I'm going to tell you a little quick story to kind of tell about what the Rome delegation was like. When I moved to Rome, you had Buddy Childers, who was the chairman of the Health and Ecology Committee. You had Richard Marables, the state senator. He was the head of the Education Committee. And you had Paul Smith, the head of the Transportation Committee. One of the most powerful delegations in the state. Now we have Preston Smith. I don't know what committee he's in charge of. But, you know, it seems like Republican Dubois Committee. And then we just have a new representative, Katie Dempsey. She just doesn't seem to be making a mark yet. She's a little new, so I'll cut her a little slack. And then we have Barry Loudermilk, who is just, he's chair of all things right-wing, homeschool, religious, conservative, nut job wing of the Republican Party. And so our delegation's just gone from awesome to just weak as can be.
But you missed the voice crying in the wilderness, David.
Well, I mean, I know that Barbara Reese and Rick Crawford are still there for us, but I mean, hopefully, Barbara, if we get the If we get the House back, I could see her being head of the Education Committee, which would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, Catherine, you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know very much about Rome. So
oh, certainly. I just was just trying to brag on what we used to have.
Yeah, that's
because I just would work as hard as I could back in the, all throughout the 90s into the early part of this decade for those three gentlemen. Buddy Childers, kind of my political mentor. Richard Marable and I share a very similar biography and always there. Paul Smith's always fascinating and fun to work for. Well, so we've gotten two different callers in, and I think more on the way from different areas. If you're for some reason listening and you're a candidate or you're listening and you working for a candidate, have them call in because we know there's more races. I mean, you know, Augusta, Albany, different places throughout the state. I don't know how many people will be on the ballot, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds. If you look at all the small towns, I mean, I go through Cave Spring, Georgia, one of the smallest towns right on the Alabama border, and there are, I'd say, 10 different candidate signs you'll see down there. So I know if a place like Cave Spring, Georgia can have candidates, if you get to bigger cities, I'm sure you got a lot.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot in Metro Atlanta, in Fulton County even. Nothing in Atlanta, but there's Chattahoochee Hill Country, Johns Creek, a whole bunch of stuff, Alpharetta. So.
Yes, I guess if the city of South Fulton would have won, that would have been on the ballot as well.
That's true. But
yes.
Of course it didn't.
Yes, and so that, and really I think we got, some places we've got too many cities. If some of those Fulton County areas I think would be a little better served possibly just being incorporated by the city of Atlanta.
Well, I think the jury's still out on that. I'm sure that a lot of them. I was just reading up about some of the candidates in Chattahoochee Hill Country, and they're all talking about the cost of services and how Atlanta, Fulton County, will be providing services at least, or City of Atlanta will be providing services, and they're, you know, thinking they're going to be able to get them for cheaper. I'm not sure I understand the economics of that, but I'm not a city planner.
Yes, I guess it depends on how many, how big and what your population is. I mean, building a jail with two cells as opposed to using two cells at Atlanta City Jail doesn't seem, you know, beneficial. Just different things will be, you know, have different sets of, you know, funding costs. I mean, opening a branch of another city's library or opening your own system, I couldn't see that would be cheaper to do that. So it all works in.
I think everybody's still, you know, even Sandy Springs is still evaluating those costs, I think, after, what, 2 years?
Yes, and that's one of the, you know, wealthier areas, I guess, when it starts.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's, you know, it's one of those things they really wanted to do it, and I think it'll be interesting to see how these things develop over the coming years, especially with the economy and housing in particular. It's an interesting experiment. We'll see how it goes.
Yes. Well, I guess in other political news, Terry Holley, he's announced or formed a exploratory committee for Congress. Now, he was the Democratic standard bearer last time on the ballot. Looked strongly at running for the special election when Paul Brown was elected. Decided not to. He's formed a congressional committee, which, you know, we do have a candidate over there in Bobby Saxon. What do y'all think of Terry's move to join the race?
Well, he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, and what's with the exploratory committee? You know, I sort of feel like, you know, do it, don't do it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the exploratory committee. I did hear the ins and outs when Bill Gillespie ran for it, and I mean, there are, I guess, situations where it works. It's just kind of but it does kind of limit you in what you can say and do. If you're in a race where you really need to go on the attack early, it's not a good move at all. I guess in a more multi-candidate race, when you're trying to let people just know about you, it doesn't hamper you as much. I know Terry's a congressional chair just like I am, and I love when people run for my district because I can get in there and help them. not going to put myself on the ballot anyway. So I guess it's just a different mindset than I attack the job from. I guess I like to coach and not play when it comes to politics.
Well, but, I mean, you do play by being a congressional district chair. I mean, that's certainly part of the game.
Well, you coach. That's what I mean. You coach instead of play.
And I think it does get a little tricky when we have, multiple hats that we have to take on and off. But, I mean, more power to him. I hope he can, I always like people to run. I think it's good, like Bob Roach was talking about earlier about building a bench. I think this is part of the process, having people investigate the process. And, maybe he'll decide not to run now but run for something else, or maybe he'll run now, or, who knows what could happen in the coming weeks. I'm just a little, I think that it's one thing to start an exploratory committee before anyone else is announced, but, there's already been somebody running. It just seems a little tentative, I guess.
Yes, I know that in the case of where he resides in now the open state house seat that Barry Fleming's going to vacate to run for Congress, and he lives in the state Senate district that was just elected in that special election that Jim White had emptied out. So there are some viable options for other seats, and from what I understand, those seats have roughly the same Democratic performance that the congressional district does. So,
David,
there are options.
David, let me throw a question out there to one of y'all. I can understand doing what he's doing if he does this 3 or 4 months ago. But we are 5 months away from qualifying. We are exactly 1 year away from the general election. Don't you think he's a little late in doing this?
I guess, he may say that, hey, I've, since I ran last time, I'm not starting from scratch. I have a little bit of, base built up, which, I see what he would be saying there. But then I will say, Bobby Saxton's come out, as far as Democratic challengers, he's raised the most money. If you compared what he's raised for a 13th of the state to what the Senate candidates have raised for the entire state, he's outraised them. Also, I just found out that Bobby Saxton has had both Governor Barnes and Mayree Barnes. That means they both gave to max out for him. So therefore, it's like some of the heavy hitters are kind of getting behind him. And they're actually, I think Governor Barnes is going to do a fundraiser, so it's not just like, oh, he called, I gave him a little money, I just want to help Democrats. But this is kind of like him kind of putting his, rep out there, if you will, to a point, saying, I really believe in this candidate and this campaign. So that kind of also boxes Terry in a little bit.
So then this could be over before it even starts for Holly, right?
Possibly. I'm sure. The cliches, let the voters decide. But in a situation where we don't have the money, if someone shows up with the money, that's pretty important. Sometimes you love those millionaire candidates, those self-funded candidates, because then that leaves somebody else that can raise the money. And we certainly in situations where we may just want to have one candidate for each race, so we don't have to fund two candidates for the primary to fight it out. We're just not in that strong a position at this point.
Yeah, and do we know? I don't know much about the 10th district, unfortunately. But is there some reason that we can determine that Terry Holley is running, even though the other guy's name I already forgot.
Saxton.
Saxton is getting some traction. I mean, is there some issue that we think there's some disagreement on or something? Do we know?
I don't know that there's any ill will from Terry and Bobby towards each other. I think Bobby reached out to Terry, and Terry may have done so the same. I don't know. Like I said, once again, being a congressional chair, whenever I find out somebody's interested in running, I call them and I drive and I meet with them. I mean, I meet with people that don't even get close to filing just so I can try to talk with them and see where they're coming from, because you know, it's just, I like to recruit candidates. I don't like to recruit myself. that's one thing I see is like, you know, because I remember last time the 11th was close to not having a candidate, and I just felt lucky to find somebody. And it never was an option for me to put my name on the ballot. But, you know, some people want to, but I just, it's just a different deal. And if you really want to run, I mean, to me, the state house, if you told me the state house seat was an open seat and it had about the same Democratic performance as the congressional seat, I mean, that would be pretty appealing to me if I really wanted to run. So, but that was one of the news. Also, speaking of congressional challengers, Congressional Quarterly put together their list of the top 10 challengers nationwide. Pretty eclectic group from across the country. The number one challenger was in Kansas, Jim Ryan, who was, I believe, was an Olympian, and he was an incumbent until he got defeated last time, so he'll be looking at a rematch. And he's raised nearly $1 million, but when you look, that's the top. He's not raised that much. There's a Republican up in New York, a Republican in Texas. A lot of Republicans have raised a lot of money. In fact, the top five candidates are all Republicans that are challengers, and one of them is Georgia's own Deborah Honeycutt, and she's raised $708,000 to face David Scott. Catherine, Tim and I have spoken about this, Bernita's spoken about this, but let's get your take on Deborah Honeycutt and her, you know, really, out, if you look at it just on the surface number, outstanding fundraising prowess.
Well, I think there's quite a few people that are unhappy with David Scott, and I'm sure that plays into it. And I think Ms. Honeycutt is, you know, she's probably a, you know, she's an attorney. She's, you know, I'm sure very capable and probably very appealing to some people. And, you know, it's not my district, but I'm frustrated with David Scott time and time again, too, with the way he votes as a Democrat. So I wonder if, I mean, I think he is, perhaps this will force his hand to be a little bit more outspoken about some of the, you know, important Democratic values. Because, I mean, it's certainly, how long has he been in there? Forever.
I think he won when they redistricted in 2002. Originally, I think the plan was that was going to be there was a group of people at the party, I believe, that were looking for David Worley to run and win that seat. There were some people at the Capitol that were looking for Greg Heck to run and win that seat. And the district that people had known and the district that was actually alive and well on primary day 2002 had changed demographically, and the fact that it changed demographically, also David and Greg just attacked each other mercilessly, that created a negative environment on both of them. And then David Scott ran a very, very effective and quiet door-to-door campaign. You put all three of those together, and David Scott ended up kind of shocking them on primary day and winning that seat. And, of course, the seat was so Democratic that was the election.
Yeah.
But then, and if you looked at it, I guess on, you know, in theory or, you know, conventional wisdom, given that he was a very strong, you know, gun control advocate, he seemed like the most left-leaning of the three. However, in reality, had either Greg Heck or David Worley gone to Congress, they probably would have been far better Democratic voters on different issues like Medicare and tax plans than David Scott has, because I believe David Scott is the most conservative African-American voter,
yes,
in the Congress, and one of the most conservative Democrats of any race.
Yes, it's kind of a mystery when you think about his district.
Yes, so he is vulnerable to the left, but it was just going to take, it would take a really, really sharp candidate, and the names I've heard bandied about just aren't going to be as professional coming at it. Also, I think it really needs to get through. If a candidate ran, they would have to be from the district, and they would have to use that, because my understanding is David Scott, does he not live in his district, he didn't really live anywhere close to his district. Like, he has to drive, you know, 15, 20 minutes to actually get into the 13th, if my understanding is correct. I don't know if either one of you know.
Something he has in common with our congressman here who finally got his house drawn into his district.
Yeah, honestly, Tim, I believe David Scott lives further outside his district than Phil Gingrey ever did. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he lives, like, in Inman Park, and, you know, he'd have to drive all the way to Clayton County or South Fulton. It's not like his district's in one part of Marietta, and he lives in another part of Marietta. You know what
David,
I mean? It's worse.
Yeah, there is something more interesting about this list. I'm sitting here looking at it now. And Miss Honeycutt provides something of a mystery, and here it is. The top four people on this list in front of her are well-funded Republicans who are running in conservative districts that the Democrats all won in that tsunami last year, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Then we get to Miss Honeycutt, who is running in a pretty heavily Democratic district. She's raised all of this money, and, you know, we talked about this, that she claims she's broke now. And so where did she spend all her money? That question is still out there.
I think it's a question we're going to keep asking until we can probably ask her ourselves. Well, Catherine, I know this
careful
week...
when you start asking about the money when you got David Scott in there, so just be careful.
Yes. Well, Catherine, I know that this week there's a big training coming up. Tell us about that training.
Well, the Clinton campaign announced that they were doing a training here in Georgia, in Atlanta, next Saturday. The details are still not finalized. Unfortunately, I'm going to be in New Orleans next weekend, so I can't attend. And so are a large group of young Democrats and other devoted activists in that, from the Atlanta area. Where there's about 20 of us going to New Orleans for the weekend. So I'm not sure. I mean, there's plenty of Democrats left. We're not taking them all with us. But I guess the plan is to have they're flying in some trainers from the Clinton campaign and also recruiting some local activists to do some breakout sessions. They're talking about the way I understand the schedule. They're going to start with a big address to the whole group in the morning. They're talking about like 9 o'clock, though I think some people are trying to push it back because of the there's a Gwinnett and a Cobb breakfast that morning, so they're trying to. Everybody's trying to negotiate some timing so everybody can attract, you know, all the people. And also people who want to drive in from other parts of the state don't have to, you know, get up at the crack of dawn, or actually before the crack of dawn. And then I guess they're going to have breakout sessions and do some, you know, activist training. I'm sure they'll be talking about canvassing and phone banking and reaching out, you know, acting as surrogates for Senator Clinton. I think it's great. I'm glad that we're getting some attention. I'm sure that it was somewhat in response to that Camp Obama, which is fine if that's if that's the kind of response we get when. I think it's wonderful that they're, you know, actually coming to Georgia and paying attention to what we're doing down here.
Yes, I think trainings are great. I mean, I've been through a lot of them. And that's kind of, I guess, what I'd like to see. And I guess it's going to be more the state party. It's kind of like, when you go through school, you get your junior college diploma, or some people do, junior college diploma, then your four-year degree, then you get your master's, you might get your specialist, your doctorate on through. There's like levels, and it seems like, unfortunately, though, a lot of the training now is just, it's that low level, the high school, the junior college, and then, you know, the next group comes through, and it's still that. I kind of hope to see more breakout where people can learn about specific things in campaigning, and kind of grow their base and, you know, get more diverse in what they're learning. And I'm hoping that'll come next, although it won't be for the presidential candidates or any one candidate to do. I think it's more of a party that'll have to put that together.
The Democracy for America training that we did here in September, I guess, was really good. They had some really skilled trainers, and the breakout sessions were very, some of them were very advanced about handling media and messaging. It was very, very well organized and appealed to a number of different levels. I was very impressed with that training. And,
yes.
And it was, now, the Clinton training is going to be completely free. The Democracy for America is, of course, they have to charge.
Well, a nominal fee is not bad. Well, I think we've got another caller here from 920 area code. Welcome.
Hey, David, Steve.
Hey, Steve, thank you for calling in. Steve, you're with the Gwinnett County Democrats, and we want you to call in and tell us about the breakfast that I think Catherine just barely touched on. Well, first, Steve, what's your role with the Gwinnett County Dems?
I'm a vice chair on the executive committee.
Vice chair, and I think if people throughout the state get emails from the Gwinnett County Democratic Party, it's usually from Steve Deek, so you're kind of the communications man as well.
Yeah, just kind of, you know. Send out the. I have the system that sends it out for them, and you know, I do that, and I do precinct ops. So,
sure. Okay. Well, tell us, Steve. Tell us the details on this breakfast.
First, Mike Berlin, the chair of the county, would like to apologize. He's traveling. He's coming back from Baltimore. Ideally, it would have been his call, not mine.
Oh well, we've had Mike on before, and I'm sure we'll have him on the future. But we always like to get new voices in.
The breakfast is we're calling it a pre-legislative breakfast. Basically, it was Herb. Are you guys familiar with Herb Green? Herb's in his mid-80s. He's been with the party in Gwinnett for over 50 years. Strong union member. His work with, you know, he's got his pictures. He's got pictures with Jimmy Carter on Air Force One. He got a letter put in. Max Cleland had recognized him in front of the Senate. So Herb's been a real strong Democrat for years. And he personally called Max and asked him if he could attend this breakfast. So Max is flying down as a favor for Herb, coming down from D.C. specifically for this event. So.
Yes, and so this is going to be in Gwinnett County, but I know Gwinnett County is a large county with a lot of cities. Where would this take place at?
It's in Duluth. It's at the Marriott at Gwinnett Center off of, I'm drawing a blank now.
Sugarloaf Parkway is where the Gwinnett Center's at.
Not Gwinnett Center, I'm sorry. Gwinnett Place.
Gwinnett Place Mall, okay,
yeah,
so another big population hub.
Yeah, it's down off Pleasant Hill.
Yes, and so he's coming down, and of course, I guess this is kind of almost like a Jefferson Jackson Day type event for y'all.
It's the biggest event we've had in a while, absolutely. But, you know, next spring we're hoping to have a nice dinner and getting Governor Warner has agreed to come down for that one.
Wow.
Cool. That's next spring. This one, we're also, all of our representatives to the General Assembly are going to be there, and they're going to talk a little bit about possible legislation coming up, you know, in the next session.
Yes, and so the cost of the breakfast will be?
$35.
Yes, and so that'll be a good fundraiser for the party, I take it.
And they can pay at the door if they want RSVP. They can email Cheryl at breakfast@GwinnettCountyDemocrats.com.
Yes, and so I guess $35 a person. When y'all normally have a breakfast, I'm sure most of the money goes towards the, you know, the restaurant hosting the breakfast. But this likes to be a fundraiser for the party as well.
Yeah, we're hoping with Senator Cleland there that it generates a lot of interest. And we've also invited the four Senate candidates. We haven't heard back from them yet, but we're assuming at least a few of them will come.
And this is United States Senate, not a state Senate.
Yes, U.S. Senate.
Okay. Yes, well, I think you emailed me when I was trying to get you or Mike to come on the show, and you said you're up in Iowa and you're supporting Senator Obama. Tell us about how things are going in Iowa.
You know, I'm working in Green Bay for 6 months, so I figured it would be a good time to go over to Iowa, spend a weekend over there, you know, at least a day, and canvass. I've been over there twice now. I was in Clayton County, which is in the northeast corner, right on the Mississippi River. It's a fairly blue area, and you know, went in yesterday morning, got some packets, went out and talked to people. It's funny because Iowa's, you know, they like the whole person in the nation, the whole pampered thing. When you go to a door, they kind of look at you and you tell them who you're supporting, and then they kind of grin, you know, one of those things where, well, what are you else going to ask me? You know, then you start talking to them and they say, well, okay, I think I know who I'm going to vote for. You talk to them a little longer and they say, okay, it's your guy. So it's a lot of give and take, and you can sit at one door for, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, like bring you in for water or coffee. You know, it's completely
it's
different.
Real politics.
Yeah, and it's completely different than, I mean, canvassing, and plus, because they're used to the caucus, you know, canvassing in Georgia is like Russian roulette. You never know what you're going to get at the door. But there they expect it, and they're all kind to you regardless of who they're supporting.
Yes, the caucus activities, the way it's kind of been described to me, is that it's kind of like the fraternity or sorority pledge system. Everybody's trying to get them with their candidate and their group, and who's supporting that candidate is almost sometimes more important than what the candidate stands for, since there's really, if you looked at all the issues, they're probably within 10 percentage points of each other on the issues on some type of candidate grid, questionnaire grid.
Yeah, because when we go out, too, the first thing they tell us is who the precinct captain is that's supporting Mike Obama in your precinct. Here's the precinct captain's name. He's supporting him. When you talk to these folks, they know their precinct captains. Tell them he's supporting, you know, tell them he's supporting Obama. He said that'll make a big deal, a big difference for him.
Yes, and so I guess those folks really get wooed, try to get on board early, to build that support and that momentum.
Yeah.
And so that'll be interesting. Well, so you're up in Green Bay. Well, what are you doing up in Green Bay? Political or working for the Packers or what?
No, it's I worked at Home Bank, and when they went bankrupt, we all lost our jobs. So I went back into doing some consulting, QA management type of consulting. So.
Okay, and so Green Bay is how long a drive for? So you get to the border of Wisconsin. I mean Iowa.
It's about 4.5 hours.
4.5 hours. So that's not a bad drive. I guess that'd be like some folks going over to maybe Columbia, South Carolina from here.
Yeah, so, get up 4 in the morning, drive over, canvas all day, drive back.
You got to be committed. Well, and actually, I think this is now a good time. Starting at the early stages of forming a kudzu vine road trip and just kind of sharing it with some folks, but I just want to get it out there, and we'll talk about it more in the future. Talking about going up for about three, well, actually, we'll be all day the day of the caucuses, but actually going up the day before and coming back the day after. Going to the Iowa caucuses, what I call the Super Bowl of politics. This is probably the most exciting Iowa caucuses easily since 88, if not even more exciting than 88, with both sides being contested. Do you get that sense being up there, Steve, that people are viewing it that way?
Yeah, definitely. They're excited to be involved. There are people that, one of the things I've seen with the Obama camp is they're going after a lot of folks that have never caucused before. So they're kind of new to it, and they're either really excited or they're hesitant. And they have to keep calling them and contacting and touching them to make sure that they don't back out at the last minute. So if you're going to be up here, I can get you in contact with some folks, too.
Yes, well, we're gonna go to observe all the different stuff on caucus night, the actual big night. Well, tell us this, Steve. We see on the Democratic side all the people are playing in Iowa. Everybody's involved, striving for votes. I mean, certain candidates, John Edwards is probably the main one that comes to mind, are putting almost everything on Iowa. But on the Republican side, there's really, I know that Mitt Romney's put a lot into Iowa, and Mike Huckabee's put a lot in Iowa, and then some of the other big candidates, Giuliani, McCain, Thompson, are kind of ignoring the state. How do you think that seems to be playing among the Iowa voters, maybe not the rank-and-file Democrats or Republican, but maybe some of the swing voters?
We've knocked on a few doors that were split households, where one of them was looking at either Huckabee or Romney. That's the only names that were even mentioned. I never heard Giuliani's name even mentioned, or anybody else. Those are the only two names that they mentioned at three houses I knocked on.
Yes, and so do you think if, for instance, a Giuliani, a McCain, a Thompson wins the nomination, Iowa, which is a state that went for us in 2000, went to Republicans in 2004, do you think that could swing a few thousand votes to the point where that's the deciding factor?
Where they showed the Democrats showed the commitment of at least coming and paying attention to them?
Exactly.
It might. I guess it would. It may depend on the candidate, too. It may depend on maybe the first or second candidate, but if it's the person who finishes third in Iowa on the Democrat side, I don't know if it's as big of a deal. But if the Democrat finishes first, yeah, it might.
Yes, I just know that seems to be a kind of, they get offended when you ignore them, and there's a lot of candidates on the Republican side that are just pushing Iowa away. And to me, it seems like Iowa, I don't know that, obviously you don't have to spend tons of money as far as media buys there, but you do have to put an infrastructure there. So I'm not sure if it's more expensive or less expensive. But if it is less expensive because, you know, hiring people is cheaper than buying airtime, it seems very, you know, kind of short-sighted not to compete there.
A lot of customized literature goes out in Iowa, though, too. So from all the candidates I saw that had lit out yesterday, all the candidates, they tailor their stuff. It's got Iowa all over the front of it. It's got pictures of the Iowa flag. So the expense is there, too, for doing that literature. And I know a couple of the campaigns, Obama's campaign sent out 100,000 DVDs.
Yes.
When the campaign, you know, got ramped up this summer.
Yes, and so, but I mean, it's just interesting. It's a different world, so it's good to have somebody there on the ground. Well, before we let you go, Tim or Catherine, do you have any questions for Steve?
Well, how is the campaign pretty organized, and do you feel like they're competing pretty well in Iowa, Steve? This is Catherine.
Yeah, as far as Obama, absolutely. I mean, I was in Dubuque a month ago, and this time I was in Clayton County. And you can see the structure. They've got the same structure everywhere. They've got the same instructions everywhere. Everything's entered the same way.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that. I hope they, whatever the results may be, I hope they're willing to, you know, share that with the local Democrats, because that's so important to have that information going forward.
And we talked about Van while I was there, because apparently a couple months ago, a couple volunteers for a candidate, when they found out somebody was supporting the other candidate, they were deleting their phone numbers in the database. And because they're using Van, they were sharing that information. You know, they'd mark them as bad number. So when the Van would run through their cycle of fixing numbers, they deleted them. And they had to call and raise a fuss about it, and they got the data backed up again. But it was just a couple people on one campaign, so it wasn't that bad. But they are sharing the information. It's going in the Van, and they have special tags. But the general data is all there.
Oh, that's really good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yes, because they'll be,
we,
you
all
know,
recognize
this
the importance
is
of keeping that information,
yep,
for the future. So Iowa's pretty well organized, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, Steve, I thank you for calling us in and telling us about both those big things, the Iowa caucuses and the Democratic breakfast with Max Cleland next Saturday in Duluth.
And what time is the breakfast, Steve?
9:30 to 11:30.
Okay.
So 9:30 there at the Marriott in Duluth near Gwinnett Place Mall. Well, Steve, I want to have you back on again because you've a resident of or from Virginia, and that's kind of a comeback story in the South for the Democrats. So we want to share several minutes on that topic individually on a future week as well.
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Okay. Thanks again for calling in.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Stay warm.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, Tim, if you could bring us to the outrage of the week.
All right, okay. Let's talk a little bit tonight about the recent actions of a couple of folks that you might not be that familiar with. Their names are Harvey Johnson and Pat Philbin. They work for FEMA, or at least one of them still does. I don't think it's any secret that FEMA has not had a good recent run. Well, actually, that's putting it charitably. What they have been for the last 2 years is a disaster of a government agency. We know how they perform with Katrina, so I won't go into that again. What I want to do now is to talk about their latest performance, that being in the California wildfires. On October 25th, FEMA announced a hastily called press conference that was going to be carried live on Fox News and MSNBC. Well, the reporters were notified at the last minute, and they were not yet at the side of the press conference when the appointed time arrived. And this is where our two guys come in. The press conference came on right on schedule. Deputy Director Harvey Johnson of FEMA was the spokesman at the podium. But the so-called reporters that were there were not reporters at all, but FEMA employees. They just pretended to be reporters. And they proceeded to throw softball questions to Mr. Johnson, who dutifully answered them, and he did it with a straight face. They even had a FEMA employee interrupt to announce that only one more question would be allowed, just like they would do in a real press conference with real reporters. And if that wasn't bad enough, well, then it got worse. The White House immediately released a statement saying that they didn't know anything about this beforehand and that they didn't condone it. Now, that's fine, I guess, but the only thing is that they released this statement before anybody had even asked them about it. It was almost like they had this statement made up in advance. And now enter our second person in this, a gentleman by the name of Pat Philbin. He was the director of internal affairs for FEMA. The day after the press conference, he announced that he was responsible for it. He then resigned. But there was just a slight little problem with this resignation of his. Turns out he was resigning, all right, but he was doing so to take a position as director for public affairs for the Director of National Intelligence. Now, a bothersome thing here is that they might have gotten away with all of this if it hadn't been exposed by the Washington Post. The administration was so embarrassed that they didn't give Philbin his new job. I want to ask you, the listener, this question. Are you surprised by any of this? Well, I'm not. This administration is incompetent. Why should one of its agencies be any different? This is the absolute height of outrageous, David.
Well, Tim, another great outrage, but I will tell you what. I might have to say I don't know if the Republican or the Bush administration knew about what was going on. Because you know, if facade press conferences are going on and the Bush administration can help out, they would have definitely sent that fella from that conservative news blog that had the leather-wearing sex site going on with the fake name. They'd have sent him over to be in that press conference. So they might have their hands clean on this one.
Yeah, the key word in all of this is incompetent, David. That word just keeps rearing its ugly head when we talk about the Bush presidency, don't it?
Yes, and what's so sad is of all the branches that should be nonpartisan, it should just be about quality and good government, it should be FEMA. You want competence.
Unfortunately, the word quality does not apply to FEMA.
No, I mean, it's giving favors to your political buddies, your fundraising people, your rangers, all the stuff, and it's just not an area where you can afford to do that. I mean, you know, while we may think some things that happened at the Attorney General's office is terrible, while we may think, you know, what Bush thinks of the UN by pointing people that don't even believe it should exist is terrible, when you're talking about the safety of Americans, tens of thousands and, you know, possibly a million at a time, there's just no room for, you know, partisanship and political favors.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
There are so many competent people in this country that could do those jobs that would be, you know, would welcome the opportunity to help people in those circumstances. And we don't take advantage of them, and we don't give them the opportunity to help. It's really a shame.
Yes, well, I mean, like, there's a fellow from Thames County, Gary McConnell, who was the head of GEMA, did a great job when the floods happened in Albany. You know, he was appointed by Governor Miller and stayed on for Governor Barnes and then was let go due to public partisanship. But, I mean, that's a fellow just locally here in Georgia that I think would do way better job than these characters they found. Tim, any thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the job that Gary has now, he goes around to different states in the country actually training emergency management agency personnel. That's how good he was at this. And don't forget, he also had a lot to do with things like the Olympics and stuff like that. So this guy is the perfect example of someone that could still serve in government that doesn't get that chance to because of partisanship.
Certainly. Well, another great kudzu vine, 8 o'clock's upon us. Next week, I want to let everybody know I talked to Dale Cardwell right after the show with our technical glitches. He was more than understanding. But we're kind of tentatively looking at having him come back next week. But, of course, check the blogs, Tondi's Tavern, Blog for Democracy, and all the details about what we have planned for the show will be on there. Well, thank you again, Catherine and Tim.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night.